Tonight was the Winter is Coming edition of AEW Dynamite for Wednesday, December 13, 2023. Usually we have an AEW World Championship match on the Winter is Coming episode, but MJF is hurt, legit hurt, and he obviously has a title defense coming up on pay-per-view at the end of the month. We have a brand new pay-per-view, so no title match tonight. Instead, we had not one, not two, not three, four Continental Classic tournament matches, three from the Gold League, one from the Blue League, which normally they save for Collision. Not that I'm complaining about the match we got tonight between Brody King and Andrade El Idolo, but we did get four tournament matches, and really, if you are not a fan of the Continental Classic, you are going to hate this episode of Dynamite. If you are not a fan of just the in-ring that the tournament offers, the great in-ring action in the absence maybe of some of the bigger stories that you're looking for, there was certainly a storyline development at the end of the show. But this was not the show for you if you are not into this Continental Classic stuff. If you are, then this was a very good episode of Dynamite, because up and down the card, we had nothing but great pro wrestling matches. From the opening tournament match that we had on this show right through until the main event. The main event is the match I was looking forward to all week long. It was Jon Moxley and Swerve Strickland. They came into tonight, all knotted up, 9 points apiece in the Gold League. And I thought for sure, I said it last week, I said, this is going to be our first tie of the tournament. This is going to be our first 20-minute time limit draw. I was convinced that they were saving it for this match tonight. And we did not get a 20-minute time limit draw. Jon Moxley pinned Swerve Strickland. Now, he had a cheat to win, and Swerve's shoulder was about 5 inches up off the mat. So good job there, Paul Turner. But Moxley picks up the win, and the way that they did it, you know, Moxley looked into the camera when the match was over and said, whatever it takes. And they lingered on Swerve for a while. He was visually just pissed off. He was very upset that he got screwed over effectively. But they lingered on him long enough where now I can kind of see where I think, where I hope the story of this tournament is going now, because Swerve next week on this show is in a must-win situation. Swerve can still get to the semifinals. He can still go all the way to the finals, but he has to win. And he's going to be wrestling Roosh next week. So as much as I was looking forward to this match tonight with him and Moxley, I am very much looking forward to that match next week. Even though Roosh is now mathematically eliminated from winning the tournament, he can play the role of spoiler here for Swerve next week. But Swerve now has to win. And then he can make it all the way to the semis in a possible rematch with Jon Moxley, which is where I think this is headed. So not the finish that I was expecting, but I still, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be very upset that Swerve lost. But I think that they're telling a story here, right? There's that word. I think they're telling a story with him. And so let's wait and see what they do in the next couple of weeks, because I think we're going to get that rematch between him and Moxley. But up and down the card, again, the Continental Classic, the one thing that you can always rely on with these tournament matches, and it really has not been any different on Collision if you've been paying attention to those matches with Eddie Kingston and Brody King and Bryan Danielson and Andrade and all everybody in the Blue League. And I think the Blue League is more interesting as far as, you know, the names that are involved and the way the standings are. But consistently between the two shows in both leagues, this tournament has given you what it promised. And Tony Khan even made the comment at the beginning of all this, and he said, if you are a fan of professional wrestling for the in-ring, if you are a fan of pro wrestling for the wrestling, and what was his exact quote? Because he went off, I remember. He made some kind of comment, I think, about how you better fucking watch or something like that. But he's not wrong. I mean, if you paid attention to the tournament so far, the one thing that it has given you consistently is excellent pro wrestling. And for some people, that's not the most important thing. But for a lot of people, it is, right? What a surprise, I know. You watch wrestling, you want to see good wrestling. That's the one thing this tournament has consistently given us from the very beginning. And it's going to go straight through, I'm sure, until the finals of World's End. Especially if Bryan Danielson is in that final match, which I imagine he would be. So I was a fan of tonight's show. I could see, though, where some people wouldn't be if this tournament is not your thing. But we did have a segment at the very end of the show where Hangman Page was being beaten up in the parking lot by the Devil's Henchmen. And the devil himself, we think, showed up and he gave the high sign and they chokeslammed Hangman Page onto the windshield of a car. Real blasts. Which, of course, means we cannot disqualify the possibility, and I've talked about him before, that Jack Perry could end up being revealed as the devil. There's going to be multiple people who are involved in this, obviously, right? He's got four or five different henchmen every time we see him. But, you know, you see the glass, you see the spot on the glass. We got that spot in his last match at Wembley Stadium, right? We saw somebody get slammed on top of the windshield of a car. So make your short list of people who you think the devil may end up being, and Jack Perry has got to be near the top of the list. He may not be at the very top, but he's got to be on the list. We don't know who the devil is. One thing that the segment did accomplish, though, was to show you that it's not Hangman Page. I don't know that anybody honestly believed that it was Hangman Page, but they basically just told you tonight it ain't Hangman Page, even though when they opened the show, they were teasing the possibility that it was him, but it's not him. Now, the one other thing here that I wanted to mention at the top is that they were in Dallas tonight, or Arlington, but they were in Dallas, and they were promoting the Von Erichs were going to be on the show, because the Iron Claw movie is coming out in a couple of weeks, and MJF was supposed to have a role in the movie. I guess technically you could say he still does, although apparently his role is reduced to a passing glance in a montage during the movie. But no mention of the Iron Claw on the show. We did get the Von Erichs in a very quick backstage segment, and it was to set up a match for Marshall and Ross, Kevin's kids, on Rampage this Friday that they're taping tonight. And that was it. So if you tuned into the show to see, hey, what are the Von Erichs going to do? Then, boy, were you left disappointed. You want to watch the Von Erichs, though, you got to tune into Rampage on Friday. It's not really all that enticing for me. I think I'll pass. Although I am seeing the Iron Claw. You'll see the movie the day after Christmas, so I'd like to say I'm looking forward to it, but I know the story, and it's depressing as all hell, so what I'm most interested in, I'm interested to see how many other people are in the theater when I go, and I would love to know how many people who go to see this movie know the story of the Von Erichs before they go see it, because I would love to look at the people who have no idea about the Von Erichs story and just not even watch the movie, because I know what's going to happen. I would rather sit there and watch them and see their reaction. They walk in thinking, oh, this is going to be like a feel-good holiday movie. And then by the time it's over, just the look of sheer just horror on their face. I'm sure it's going to be priceless. Anyway, that's coming up in a few weeks. But this is your Dynamite review. I am the Solid Monster. It is December 13th. Winter is indeed coming. Next week, it is officially winter, but not yet. Let's get into this here. We got a cold open for the show tonight, which was a nice change of pace. Bit of a different way to open up Dynamite. With Samoa Joe in his street clothes on his way down to the ring, right out of the gate. And Joe told us that he has come here to Texas looking for answers. And he made a promise to MJF a long time ago that he would keep him whole until he got him at World's End, where he would become, in his words, the rightful AEW World Heavyweight Champion. But last week, he was made into a liar. Says he looked up at the screen, he saw MJF laid out in the back, potentially jeopardizing his title opportunity. Oh my God. It's infecting this show now. Title opportunity. It's a title shot. It's a title shot. He wants his title shot. That's what he wants. When he got to the back, though, he said he saw a beer bottle that a certain cowboy likes busted over MJF's head. And he mentioned the smell of Stetson and disappointment. And as he walked around the building searching for that cowboy, a certain Hangman was missing. See, I told you last week, the whole point of that was to frame Hangman as a potential devil possibility. That was the whole purpose of the beer bottle. And it led immediately into the opening segment tonight. That brought Hangman Adam Page down to the ring. And he told Joe that if there's something he wants to accuse him of, just say it like the man he thought he was. And he said he doesn't care about the bromance. He doesn't care about laser tag or any of this stuff that we've seen MJF and Adam Cole doing for months. He doesn't care about the game of whodunit. Joe told him maybe he's already made up his mind. He being Joe. Maybe he's already made up his mind and he only came out here tonight not to be the detective, but to be the executioner. And Hangman told him to do something about it. And right on cue, Roderick Strong and the Kingdom walk out. Roddy kept yelling, Samoa, over and over again. So I love how he doesn't yell Joe. He yells Samoa over and over again. Like he's trying to go on vacation or something. You know, like he's trying to search which is the right way to make my way over to Samoa. So he yelled for Samoa. And he told Joe he needs to listen to Hangman, who he called his young boy. And that's a reference to their time in Ring of Honor many years ago. He said Jay White asked for a world title match, and what happens? He gets attacked. He said the Acclaim lose their tag team match for MJF when they teamed up a few weeks ago, and they get attacked. Then the Goons attack Max, but they don't lay a single shot on him, and then Joe comes to his aid. We never saw them physically touch MJF. We only saw him laying there. He said it's obviously Max. Max is the devil. Hangman tried to say something. Roddy shoved him away. And so Paige knocked him on his ass. Joe and Hangman got up at each other's face, and Aubrey told Joe to leave the ring because we were opening with Hangman's match. He was going one-on-one on this show with Roderick Strong. And that took us right into the opener. Hangman fought back from the opening attack because he got attacked right away. And he connected on a fall-away slam. He kipped up. That led into a standing shooting star for two. Matt Taven was jumping around outside. He had a sign from a fan that said neck strong. And he was jumping up and down with this sign. Strong fought back. He tried to keep Hangman grounded, but Page responded with a big boot and a snap suplex. And then he connected on a springboard clothesline that sent Roddy to the outside. And he got met with a slingshot crossbody. Page wanted a moonsault. Mike Bennett, though, took the referee to allow Matt Taven to distract Hangman just long enough for Strong to take control with a backbreaker onto the top turnbuckle. Now, Page mounted a comeback until both men collided, and they ended up both down on the mat. Page started firing off strikes in the corner until Aubrey pulled him away, and Roddy tried for a jumping knee, but he jumped right into a Death Valley driver. Page wanted a superplex. Roddy slid out. Page, though, tried a moonsault, landed on his feet, and Strong dodged. He charged, and he ran right into a pop-up powerbomb for two. Roddy kicked free from a dead-eye attempt. He connected on an angle slam into a tiger driver and then into the stronghold. Page got the ropes, fought to the apron, and again, Mike Bennett grabbed the referee. This time, though, Page was ready for Taven. He took him out with a moonsault from the apron to the floor. Bennett joined his partner. Page hit the top rope Orihara moonsault, which he tried for earlier. Took both of them out. And then he went for a buckshot. And Roddy was there to counter. Page, though, got a roll up for two. And then as Roddy stumbled to his feet, Page picked him up, dropped him with a dead eye, and he picked up the win. From neck strong to no neck at all on the dead eye. Hangman Page gets the win. Very good opener. And Hangman now climbs back into the win column, which is something he needed because he lost two straight matches to Swerve. So in order to get back to his winning ways, he picked up the win here. And he needed them more than Roddy did anyway. But they're really going hard to convince you that MJF is the devil. Every time we see Roddy come out, he's saying this to Adam Cole. He said it here in this segment in the opener. It's Max. Max is the devil, and usually the person who protests the loudest is usually the guilty party in these situations. And Roddy, I mean, for me anyway, not just Jack Perry, but Roddy has been at the top of the list for me from the beginning as far as who the devil could be. And for my money, he's still at the top of the list. I mean, if I had to come up with who do I think are the two or three likeliest, you know, to be revealed as the devil, Roddy is up there. Jack Perry is up there too. And, well, we'll talk about Jack Perry later and what I think of that as a potential reveal. But it makes me wonder here, as I'm watching this segment, about Samoa Joe. The idea that Samoa Joe could be the devil. The reason I really don't like the idea and I haven't really been fond of it, is because it just doesn't seem to fit Joe's character. Like, Samoa Joe, whether he's a babyface or a heel, you know, he's not your chicken shit heel, right? He's not the kind of person, I think, who's going to throw on a Halloween mask and run around as something that he's not, and then pull it off to do the big reveal. So I don't see him as being the devil, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was connected to this in some way. You know, and here he's acting all magnanimous, I'm trying to protect MJF, I want him to be whole going into World's End, but then we come to find out that he's in cahoots with Roddy in the Kingdom, right? Or there's some connection there where he's tied in with a certain other group of people, where he could be part of this. Even if he himself is not the devil, he could very well end up being part of this in some way. But it's just hard for me to see him being revealed as the devil, because it just doesn't fit. You know, it's just, that's not who Samoa Joe is. Now, we had a rare Blue League match in the Continental Classic. Rare because we usually save those for Collision. We had one on Dynamite tonight between Brody King, who has had himself a hell of a tournament. I mean, he has been on an absolute tear. One-on-one with Andrade El Idolo. Both men came into this tied at 6 points apiece. CJ Perry, for those of you not following some of the minor storylines, or any of the storylines on Collision, she walked out with Andrade, headed to the back with his mask. They have been doing an angle where he is a client of, and this is all to try to make Miro jealous, because when she debuted in AEW, you know, he didn't seem to appreciate it. He ran away from her. And so now she's trying to branch out on her own, and she's trying to enlist clients of her own. And she's trying to make him jealous, right? They used to talk all the time when they were in WWE about all the different places that they would, you know, have sex. And they had sex in the tank at WrestleMania 31. Earlier that day before he defended the U.S. title against John Cena. You know, that's why he lost. You do realize that. That's why he lost the title to John Cena. See, that's what happens. He should have been focused on his match. Instead, he took his eye off the ball. And, you know, he was bumping uglies with her in the tank, and then he lost. See? Let that be a lesson to you. So anyway, that's what's going on with that story. But she just came out, immediately went to the back, because managers are not allowed at ringside during the Continental Classic. Excalibur pointed out that if you have a head-to-head win over someone in your league, in your group, and you end up being tied with them, you would be the one moving on to the semifinals. And I believe that's the first time that they have mentioned that or clarified that on commentary. It's the first time I've heard that. Andrade tried to work a headlock early. King, though, got to his feet, and he just flattened him with a shoulder tackle and a senton. We got a big chop battle between the two of them. Andrade floated over in the corner. He nearly got caught in the sleeper over the ropes, which on commentary they pointed out that was the way that he won the Royal Rampage a couple of years ago. Remember when he choked out Darby Allin and then he let go? Darby just fell to the ground like a sack of potatoes. So he tried to do that here to Andrade. He escaped, though. He hit a top rope crossbody. Only got a one count out of it. Brody King, he rolled to the floor. Andrade met him with a moonsault off the second rope. Back to the ring they went. Andrade got placed on the ropes, and he got viciously chopped, which put him on the floor. And that put Brody King in control during the picture-in-picture. Andrade tried to start a strike exchange. King, though, easily won that. Went for a corner charge, missed. Then he ran headfirst into the turnbuckle. Andrade blocked a boot, hit multiple dragon screws. Finally, he took King down with a flying forearm. Andrade got a body slam. He went up top. He connected on a split-legged moonsault for two. King dodged the running double knees in the corner. He turned Andrade inside out on a lariat. He just fucking wrecked this guy with a lariat. Got a close near fall out of it. King connected on his corner cannonball. Andrade dodged the gonzo bomb. Brody went for another lariat. Andrade got him with a spinning back elbow, though. Knocked him out. He was down. Andrade took too long going up to the top, though. Brody recovered. He cut him off. Could not hit a superplex. Instead, Andrade fell backwards, which looked dangerous as all hell. But in doing so, what he did was he slammed Brody King face first onto the exposed part of the turnbuckle beam that connects the turnbuckle to the ring post. And then Brody King fell backwards into the ring. Andrade got back inside. He hit his double underhook DDT, and he became the first person to defeat Brody King in the Continental Classic. And now Andrade stands atop the Blue League all by himself with 9 points. This was excellent. Excellent match between these two. Hard-hitting, back-and-forth affair. Again, the first Blue League match we've had on a Wednesday. And, you know, I've talked up Mark Briscoe a lot in this tournament, even though he's winless. But every match that Mark Briscoe has had in the Gold League has been excellent. Like, he's been the MVP up to tonight. He had been the MVP of the Gold League. But you gotta, look, you gotta take your hat off to Brody King and what they have done with him. And the matches that he has put in this tournament so far. For him, it's been a breakout tournament in many ways. And even with his first loss tonight, it's been a hell of a run that he's on. And it's going to be Brody King against Bryan Danielson on Collision this Saturday. And we're going to have Andrade taking on Claudio. So those are two of your Blue League matches coming up this weekend. Renee was in the back with the Von Erichs. Kevin Von Erich and his sons, Ross and Marshall, they were in MLW for a few years, but they have not worked much over the past year and a half. They've had a couple of matches independently, and that's it. They just have not, it's almost like they've just fallen off the face of the earth. Now, I know they lived in Hawaii previously, the family did. They recently moved to Texas, so I don't know if that's in preparation for them signing somewhere. I would be surprised if Ross and Marshall don't end up working in AEW. If they don't offer, if Tony Khan doesn't offer them a contract, I would be surprised. I think he'll probably offer them something. But they were on the show tonight in this segment, which was very brief and wasn't much of a segment. It was to set up a match on Rampage this coming Friday. So what happened is Renee asked them how it came to be that they ended up here in AEW. And Kevin said that he loves AEW. Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet he's tuned into the television every Wednesday, every Friday, and every Saturday. Watching AEW. Yeah, all right, bullshit. But he loves AEW, he says. He likes the style, and he has a lot of friends in the company. All of a sudden, Orange Cassidy, Danhausen, and Trent Beretta showed up. Every time they show Danhausen, the moment that Danhausen is shown on television, it always gets a big pop. You can listen to the big pop from the crowd. And people wonder what... The people who don't get Danhausen or get very angry when they see him on TV and they wonder, why is he featured, right? That he hasn't been featured too much recently. He only just came back. But you want to know why? Because this audience, it's like Orange Cassidy. This audience, they love him. That's why. So he got a reaction when he walked in. Cassidy then invited Ross and Marshall to be his partners because he needed two partners, he said, for a match on Rampage this Friday. And Beretta and Danhausen took issue with this. They're like, hey, we're right here. And then Cassidy said, well, we're in Texas. And the Von Erichs accepted. I'll say this about this segment. It's a good thing none of the actual Von Erichs are in this Iron Claw movie, if their acting skills here are any indication. It's a good thing it's based on their story and they're not actually in the movie. But like I said, I would be surprised if they don't end up being signed. I would think Tony Khan might want to take a flyer on them. What very little I saw of them in MLW, which wasn't much. I mean, I've probably seen a grand total of 2 of their matches. I wasn't overly impressed. They looked okay. They looked capable. There was nothing special about them. So I can't say, oh, Tony Khan, it's a must sign. You know, Tony Khan has signed plenty of people as it is. And frankly, there are other people that he should be looking at signing. If we're talking about a Mercedes and, you know, people like that. The Von Erichs, you know, again, if he wants to take a flyer on them, you know, it could be worthwhile. But again, it's been a long time since they've worked. Not sure why. Now, Kenny Omega was out to the ring. Do we even need to talk about this fucking segment? Kenny Omega out to the ring. He was dressed like he was on his way to the gym. Either that or he was on his way to Walgreens to pick up a prescription. I mean, he just looked like he had just given up. Walked to the ring. They went to commercial at that point. When they came back, Chris Jericho joined him in the ring. Jericho had a brace on his, I believe it was his right arm, to sell the injury he sustained at the hands of Ricky Starks and Big Bill backstage at Full Gear. Remember, Jericho had mentioned that at the scrum that Omega, as soon as the show was over or their match was over, he left to go home because his cat was sick. And so Jericho was there all by himself, and Ricky Starks and Big Bill attacked him in the hallway. They drove a production crate into his arm, so hence the arm injury. So Jericho said the reason why it's been a while since they've been here is because of Big Bill and Ricky Starks. They put him out for 3 weeks. Then last week, Big Bill put Omega down. He called for the champions to get their sorry asses out here. Starks and Bill, they made their way out on stage. Starks said that he has nothing against Omega. He thanked him for AEW, but he said Jericho sucks the life out of everything that he's in. And Starks asked Omega if he really thinks he can trust Jericho, and he pointed out what happened with the Inner Circle. He pointed out what happened with the Jericho Appreciation Society. Bill told Omega to think of the things that Jericho has done to him. And he said no one would be surprised if Jericho turned on Omega too. And Omega said, look, Jericho knows that I don't trust him. And then Omega brought up The Firm, which I would like to forget, and I'm willing to bet most people have. If you don't remember, that was the faction that Big Bill was part of previously. It was The Firm. The what? Yeah, The Firm. That's what they were. He asked the fans if they remembered it, and then Omega said that, well, I can't say that I do either. So he completely buried The Firm. He said The Firm was more like The Flaccid. And then he made a soft joke, because, of course, we have Big Bill out here. So he makes a soft joke. This is where the segment began to nosedive, and there was no saving it. Like, the plane is going down, and you're just waiting for the crash landing. There was no rescue in sight. Omega said that he and Jericho would take the AEW tag team titles from Starks and Bill at World's End. So now we have an official date for the match. World's End, December 30th, tag team titles on the line. He accidentally referred to himself and Jericho as the Winnipeg Jets. Then he corrected himself. He said, Winnipeg Jets? The Golden Jets. Yeah, that's their name. So he corrected himself to the Golden Jets. I'm telling you, he sounded like he was out. There were a few flubs from him. He just looked and sounded like he was just out to lunch here for this entire segment. Starks accepted the challenge. He said that he hopes Jericho remembers back in January when he beat him on Dynamite. And then Bill pointed out that Starks actually beat Jericho twice. The second time was on pay-per-view. I have no memory of this. I remember the match on Dynamite. I got to be honest with you. I have no memory of there being a pay-per-view rematch between the two. I don't doubt that it happened. I guess it would have been at Revolution, but I have no memory of this whatsoever. So Stark said that he and Bill are the best tag team, even though they don't have a name. And Jericho and Omega said, oh, we could fix that. And Jericho went with the absolute assholes, and they censored assholes on the TBS feed. I would imagine if you were watching this on Fight, or I guess now it's Triller. Fight TV is no more, by the way. It has been rebranded. It is now Triller TV. So all you international people who watch this show on Fight, I imagine it's been rebranded already. It's probably under its new name. On Triller, I don't think they would censor this. But that was his clever name for them. The absolute asshole. Jericho said that, well, I could do even better than that, and he got censored again when he suggested the Rick and the Dick. Yep. The Rick and the Dick. This guy's supposed to be a babyface? Not to me, he wasn't. Omega asked if it was his first day on the job. Jericho said, well, how about this? We could combine their names, and we could call them Big Billy Starks. Ha 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 ha. Get it? Billy Starks, Ring of Honor, Billy Star. Yeah, Billy Starks will be in the main event, the final battle. Yeah, there's a pay-per-view next weekend. final battle. Going to be wrestling Athena. I think Athena is finally going to drop that women's championship, and then they can get her on the AEW women's roster where she belongs, instead of being hidden away behind a fucking paywall. Ridiculous. Get that title off of her already. Stark said that one fell flat. This entire segment fell flat. He said, well, that one fell flat. He accused Jericho of buying his clothes at Hot Topic. He said, I could excuse the name that you just gave us, but I cannot excuse the outfit where you went to the local Hot Topic and you say, hey, give me the best stuff that you got. Jericho came back with, you say I'm a clout vampire. Believe me, if I was going to suck my fangs into somebody, I would do it with somebody with a lot more clout than you. Because from where I'm standing, all I see is a better dressed, less charismatic version of Enzo Amore. Omega said, hey, let's give Enzo credit. At least he would hype up Big Bill and not take all the spotlight. And Stark said, if you want a war, you'll get one. He called them a couple of Winnipeg scumbags. Omega then mocked the scumbag's name and bids us all adieu with his usual closing line. This sucked. This segment fucking sucked. I hated everything about this segment, and I like Ricky Starks and Big Bill. I got no problem with them. But my God, this segment was fucking terrible. And halfway through, I'm like, all right, we got the point here, right? You set up the match at World's End, wrap it up. But then they had to go into comedy. And they thought they were funnier than they were, and it just would never end, and it just kept going and going and going. Worst thing on the entire show. This sucked. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It is the holiday season, and depending on your circle of friends or where you work, everyone has their policies on gift-giving and exchanging Christmas cards, Secret Santas, all that stuff. I don't have to worry about any of that anymore since I work from home now, but whether or not you give gifts during the holidays, you need to also focus on giving to yourself. And this month is a great time to do just that. Whether that's by going a little easier on yourself during those tough moments, treating yourself to a day off, or starting therapy. Remember to give yourself some love this holiday season. Therapy offers a host of positive benefits, especially when you're not feeling quite right. And that tends to happen to a lot of people this time of year. It can empower you to be the best version of yourself. So here's the deal. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, I recommend BetterHelp. It's entirely online. It's designed to fit conveniently into your schedule, no matter how busy you may be. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists for any reason at any time at no additional charge. In the season of giving, give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. So here's what I'm guessing. Now that we have the match official for World's End, okay, Jericho and Omega are going to win the tag team titles. This is, as I'm looking ahead, I see Jericho and Omega winning the tag team titles. And then we're going to get the setup for the match, Jericho and Omega against Takeshita and Powerhouse Hobbs. I talked about Takeshita on the podcast this past week. For those of you wondering, whatever happened to Konosuke Takeshita? Maybe you don't keep up with all the shows. Maybe you don't watch Rampage, right? That's probably most of you watching this right now. Think back a few months when Takeshita went heel and they paired him up with Don Callis. And I thought, you know, that's exactly what he needs. Talking promos, right? Not his strong suit. His English is not great. Turn him heel, even though he was very over, like the people loved him, but you know, turn him heel, give him a mouthpiece, and let him go out there and just start kicking ass, right? That could be just what this guy needs to help take him and elevate him to that next level. And then we can get a match between him and Kenny Omega. And then we went to Wembley Stadium, and there was a trios match, and Takeshita pinned Omega. And that led into All Out a week later in Chicago, one-on-one, a great match between Takeshita and Kenny Omega, and he pinned Kenny Omega, which still means something. That was a big win, the biggest win of his career for Takeshita. You think, all right, this guy now, man, this guy's set up to go places, right? They don't have to put the world title on him right now or anything, but he's in a great position right now. I wonder what they have in store for him next. And I figured it was probably going to be another match with Omega, maybe at Full Gear. But we didn't get that. And now I look back on it, we're 3 months out from All Out, right? 3 months later. What have they done with Konosuke Takeshita since that big singles win over Kenny Omega? That should have been a big deal. Kenny Omega, one of the top stars in the company, former AEW World Champion. What have they done with Takeshita in the last 3 months? Not much. You know who the star of the Don Callis family is? Don Callis. Don Callis had Sammy Guevara. Now, he's been out because he was hurt. And then his wife had a child. So we'll put him on the side. They have Kyle Fletcher filling in for him. But the Callis family has basically been Takeshita and Powerhouse Hobbs. They brought Powerhouse Hobbs in. I thought the same thing. This could be great for Powerhouse Hobbs. Except then I think back to his entire career trajectory in this company so far has basically always been as part of a faction. It was Team Taz, and then, of course, it was QT Marshall's crew. Boy, that sure did a lot of good for him, didn't it? Now it's in the Callis family. He's bouncing around. He's like the foster child who just can't find a family that wants him. They adopt him, and then they kick him to the curb, and then it's like back to the orphanage until we find the next family for him, and then they kick him out, back to the orphanage, on to the next family. Maybe this time it'll take. So they have done nothing with really either one of these guys. They've turned them into a tag team. They've teamed up a few times on Rampage. Rampage. Now, if Jericho and Omega win the tag team titles, Takeshita's beaten Omega, Hobbs squashed Jericho on Dynamite, right, about a month and a half ago probably it was at this point, we'll get a tag team match. It'll be Jericho and Omega defending the tag team titles against Takeshita and Powerhouse Hobbs is where I think this is headed. Then the Young Bucks, who have been gone really since Full Gear, come back, full-fledged heels. They cost Omega and Jericho the tag team titles. Takeshita and Hobbs are your new tag team champions. So then they end up with some gold. That doesn't really make it any better in my mind. Because, again, Takeshita beats Omega, ends up doing tag matches. It just seems backwards to me. So they become the tag team champions, right? If it works out that way. Maybe it doesn't. They become the tag team champions. But then what? Right? I mean, again, the star of the show here is not Hobbs. It's not Takeshita. It's Don Callis. I mean, are they building to Kenny Omega against Don Callis? It almost feels that way. I mean, I know he used to wrestle, but I can't say I have any interest in seeing that. Like, what are we doing here? But because each of them have wins over Jericho and Omega, that has to be the direction that they're heading in. They think it's a great idea. I think that's debatable. But I think that's when we get the Young Bucks back. The Bucks are going to come back as heels. Honestly, the Bucks shouldn't be heels at this point. They are so played out. And they're clearly heading in that direction. Now, obviously, the way they were behaving and the way they pitched a fit when they lost. So the Bucks as heels is the way to go because as baby faces to me, they're just fucking bore at this point. So at least try something different with them. But my God, this segment, holy shit. Next up, we had Riho against Ruby Soho.
Look, everyone, it's Samoa Bro.
And now we have Samoa Bro. This was Riho's first television match since April. So it's been a while since we have seen her on the show. Timeless Toni Storm. Always good to see Timeless Toni Storm out there. She comes to the ring to do commentary. She sits down. She asks the commentators if they want her to do play-by-play or color. And Taz says, well, I do color, and these guys aren't very good at play-by-play, so why don't you go ahead and do that? Totally buried his partners there. She said Luther wasn't there because he was at home with a touch of the gout. And Mariah May was out there as well. She was standing behind Tony holding the Women's World Championship. Might be a little foreshadowing there. Ruby attacked right from the bell. Riho, though, bridged out of a pin, hit a quick drop kick. She followed with a wheelbarrow into a double stomp. Soho tried for a back superplex on Riho in the corner, but got caught up in the ropes, and Riho hit a great double stomp. And then she waved at Tony at ringside at the commentary desk. That took us into picture-in-picture. Soho gained control during the break, but Riho turned the tide with a head scissors into the ropes, and she hit a 619. Riho missed a top rope stomp, and Soho hit the no future for a near fall. Riho avoided... It's kind of annoying. Riho avoided Destination Unknown, countered a guillotine into a Northern Lights, followed by a dragon suplex and the charging double knees for the win. Ho, ho, ho. Come on. It's Christmas time, right? We need all the hoes we can find. That didn't come out right, but you know what I mean. I thought this was fine. You know, gives Riho a win because clearly she's going to be challenging Toni Storm at World's End for the championship. So she's got to rack up a couple of wins first. And this was a win. I mean, it's in a way, it's kind of sad to see Ruby used in this way, but she's not the flavor of the month. It's Riho. She's the one getting the shot, not her. Then we got a Wardlow video pack, or Wardho. We'll go with Wardlow. Wardlow video pack. I've got to entertain myself somehow, so come on. We got a Wardlow video package. He said he's been preparing for war since he returned. He said he's left the path of mayhem behind him, destroying every person in his way. He said, just like the Archangel Michael, he will be the one to bring the devil to his knees. Wardlow said MJF's world is coming to an end. Nice little play on words there with their world's end event coming up. I've been saying it for weeks. Like, Wardlow is clearly part of this crew. We saw it again at the end of the show tonight. But we've seen it other times where the devil's men in their black masks and their black suits. And you could clearly tell that in some of those segments, one of the devil's men has been Wardlow. I mean, he just has a certain, his mannerisms and just his size, the way he stands there, the way he moves, it's clearly Wardlow. So I don't think he's the devil, but I do think that he is definitely 100% part of the devil's crew. So when we eventually get a reveal, he will likely be part of that crew. But I'm telling you, something big is going down on that show on December 30th. Now we got another Gold League match in the Continental Classic with Roosh taking on the winless Jay Lethal. Excalibur said that it was a must-win for Roosh. For Lethal, at this point, he's just playing spoiler. Roosh was not in there to fuck around. He made short work of this guy. He was still in things mathematically. At least at this point he was. More on that in a minute. But he was on the bubble here. And so he worked this match like he knew it. Lethal blocked the discus elbow into an enziguri. Lethal wasted too much time. He got launched into the corner by an overhead belly-to-belly. Lethal blocked bull's horns. Roosh sidestepped a lethal injection, sank in a rear naked choke for the quick submission. Just like that. A little over 4 minutes. Easy win here for Roosh. Sanjay Dutt, Jeff Jarrett, Karen Jarrett, they came out on stage to try to console Jay Lethal, and he just kind of brushed him off. Very dejected, very disappointed, and he walked to the back. Maybe there's a redemption arc in here somewhere. Not in this tournament. I mean, he's a fucking loser in this tournament. But coming out of this tournament, maybe there is a redemption arc in here for Jay Lethal, where he breaks away from Jarrett, and Sanjay ends up as a babyface. Starts to win some matches. Clearly, they're not going to do anything big with Jay Lethal in AEW, right? I mean, it's clear as day. That's not why he's there. Jay Lethal, he's a veteran. He's been around forever. He's an excellent worker. We know that. Former Ring of Honor champion. His credentials, right, speaks for itself. He is not going to be pushed as a top star in AEW. Maybe in Ring of Honor if they want to banish him back there, but not in AEW. But that doesn't mean that they can't have some kind of redemption story with him coming out of this. So his reaction here at the end of this segment was interesting. We'll see if they follow up on it. It's not going to be a major story on the show. But do they do something to follow up on it? I would hope so. I know Tony Khan doesn't always do that. But in this case, that could be something to watch out for. Switchblade Jay White against Mark Briscoe in the Continental Classic. Gold Lee was our next match. Briscoe hit his froggy bow, elbow drop early, and then Jay White rolled to the floor to avoid being pinned. Briscoe followed him outside, and then a little while later, Jay dumped him over the top rope back out of the ring, and he smacked his back hard on the ring apron on the way down. Back inside, White put Briscoe down with a DDT for a two count. That took us into the picture-in-picture break. Briscoe then, a little bit later on, hit his Cactus Jack elbow drop from the apron onto Jay White on the floor. Mark followed up inside with a razor's edge for a near fall. Briscoe set up for a Dray driller. Wow. He set up for a Jay driller. And White countered into a dragon screw, then executed a sleeper suplex, went for Blade Runner, but Briscoe countered into a suplex of his own. Briscoe went for Froggy Bow. White got his knees up, though, this time, and then Jay White hit the Blade Runner, and he scored the pin. And so, like Jay Lethal, Mark Briscoe has lost every single one of his matches so far. But this was another solid effort for him. I mean, he has been on when I say he's on a run, it's not quite the same run that Brody King has been on, because he's actually been winning most of his matches. But he's been on a run in terms of the quality of his matches. And the people like Mark, so they're behind him. He's an easy guy to root for, especially this time of year. But he's winless. Even though he's been having these great matches in this tournament, he has yet to pick up a single win. I'm not saying he should have here, but just hasn't happened for him yet. But we were told at this point that by virtue of Jay White winning this match here, that Roosh was mathematically eliminated from winning the tournament. So he had a shot earlier, but now he's got no shot. And they headlined the show, our main event, a Gold League Continental Classic match, first time ever, I believe, between Jon Moxley and Swerve Strickland. I've been looking forward to this match since it was announced last week, and we got that little face-to-face backstage between them. Swerve has obviously been on a roll. Moxley, you look at his win-loss record in this company really since the day he walked in, hell of a lot more wins than losses. So this was a big match for Swerve coming into tonight. 20-minute time limit, as all of these matches have, and they had a 5-minute overrun on the show tonight. Tony Khan announced that a few days ago, that the show was going to 10:05. Instead of 10. So there were a lot of reasons to think that this was going to be our first time limit draw in this tournament. We got holy shit chance before they even touched. A series of reversals led to Strickland hitting a head scissors that sent Moxley out to the floor. Hey, Jake Schuster just became a sound off legend. And welcome, Jake. Jake's got that red skull. I like to see it. So the head scissors sent Moxley to the floor. And we got a forearm and a chop battle between the two of them until Moxley went to the second rope. And he had his legs kicked out from under him. Strickland hit a nasty leaping DDT. This looks sick. He jumped up. He grabbed Moxley, who was on the middle rope, and just drove him. I mean, he fucking drove this guy into the mat with a DDT. And only got an earfall out of it. Moxley tried to regroup outside the ring, and Swerve would not let up. He went out right after him. Continued the attack. Back inside, Moxley exploded out of the corner with a lariat and poured down some punches before he started biting the arm. He was hitting a few blows here. He had a stalled pile driver for two. Moxley went to the floor. He crotched Swerve on the apron before driving him into the ring steps. So then we had our final commercial break. And Moxley dominated through the break. Coming out of it, he put Swerve down with a hard lariat. Swerve bought a few seconds for himself with a backbreaker across the knee. Then he came off the middle rope with a diving elbow to the back of a seated Moxley. And now Swerve, he was feeling it now. Now Swerve, he's doing a dance here. He's not quite Prince Nana, but he's starting to dance. You shouldn't dance, though, in the middle of a tournament match like this. He was feeling it. He was also, though, feeling the cutter that Moxley then caught him with. Do not break out into dance in the middle of your match. So he got dropped. Luckily for him, he kicked out before three. Moxley dropped him with a Gotch-style pile driver, and then Excalibur noted that a move like that will have an effect on Swerve's taped-up shoulder, because his shoulder has had the kinesio tape on it since the Texas Deathmatch with Hangman. So that was they were playing that story up in the match as well. Swerve caught Moxley coming off the ropes with a flatliner and then a stalling suplex, but Moxley immediately popped back up. and Swerve put him right down with a boot to the face. Swerve took a page out of the Blackpool Combat Club playbook with some hammer and anvil elbows and then the house call kick. Swerve went to the top rope for a Swerve stomp, but Moxley popped up and knocked Swerve off the top. He took a nasty spill out to the floor. Moxley told Paul Turner to count him out and that he would take the count out win. Because look, I mean, take the count out win, you get 3 points either way. It doesn't really matter. So take the win any way you can get it, I guess. Which actually is kind of how he won the match here, I guess. Swerve dove back into the ring. Moxley was there to meet him with a curb stomp, but he only got two out of it. At that point, we got the 15-minute time call from Justin Roberts, which meant we had 5 minutes left in this match. Moxley tried to sink in a rear naked choke. Swerve blocked it, but Moxley got a cross arm breaker applied. Swerve, though, got his foot on the bottom rope to break the hold. Moxley left the ring, and he grabs a chair. That will not get you points in this tournament, but he grabbed a steel chair. Swerve flew out over the top rope and knocked him down. Moxley ended up sitting in the chair, and Swerve came charging from the apron with a diving double stomp through the chair. And then back inside, he gave him a proper Swerve stomp, thought he had the match won. Moxley kicked out. Kicked out of this man's finish. So now Swerve tries for the JML driver, but Moxley counters into a roll through, and Moxley rolls him up deep. He even grabbed him by the belt. And he cinched back hard, and you could see Swerve's shoulder was like 6 inches up off the mat. But Paul Turner didn't see it, and he counted the three to give Moxley the win and another 3 points, and that now puts John Moxley atop the Gold League with 12 points. He is now in first place. He's the top star in this bracket here because he's got more points than anybody else. Swerve is now tied for second with Jay White. Each of them have 9 points, and that all but guarantees Moxley a spot in the final or the semifinals. And Swerve now puts him in a situation where he is in a must win on television next week. The cameraman was lingering on Swerve. Moxley was outside the ring. He looked into the camera and said, whatever it takes. And then he disappeared off into the crowd. The fans were not thrilled. You could hear boos. I mean, not everybody was booing, but you could hear boos from the crowd for that finish. They wanted Swerve to win. You know what I think? I think Swerve may have to pay a visit to the Moxley household. That's what I think. That's what he may have to do. But the way they lingered on Swerve, all disappointed, there's a story to tell there. The people like Swerve. Whether you consider him a heel or a babyface, right? He's a babyface, right? The fans like this guy. They cheer for him. They want to see him. And now he realizes he's in a do-or-die situation here. The fans are going to want to rally behind Swerve and see him go all the way. So he has to win next week. And I think that's what they're going to end up doing. They're going to send him. I think we're going to get a rematch between Moxley and Swerve in the semifinals, is where I think this is headed to. But I will tell you, I was very surprised that we did not get that time limit draw. I thought we were going to get that draw. I said it last week. I said this match, it just seems like the perfect time to bust out that first time limit draw in this tournament. They keep mentioning the 20-minute time limit. It's going to happen at some point. I thought it would happen here. I was very surprised that it didn't. And it's unfortunate that the shoulder came up. I'm not sure that that was meant to be. I mean, it could have been part of the plan. I just figured his shoulder was up. Not necessarily part of the story. The story was that Moxley, you know, he hooked the tights, he hooked the belt. Even if it was part of the story, though, I mean, again, it was plain as day that this guy's shoulder was so far up off the mat, you think, how did the referee not see that? But he didn't. Excellent match, though. Excellent match. This may have been my favorite match in the tournament so far. And we were not done yet, because they cut to the back, and in the parking lot were the Devil's Masked Men. They were laying a beat down on Hangman Page. And again, it was so obvious that Wardlow was one of the masked men here. I could practically see through the black mask and say, hey, it's Wardlow. As if it wasn't obvious all those weeks ago. What was it? I guess it would have been, it wasn't last week, was it? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? whenever it was, that they had MJF in the ring down on his knees. There was that one guy, one masked guy who had like a pipe in his hand. It was Wardlow. It was so obviously Wardlow. So they're beating him up, and all of a sudden, this car pulls up, and the man in the devil mask emerges. And he nods, and two of the devil's henchmen, they grab Hangman, they pick him up, and they chokeslam him on top of the windshield of this car. And the windshield smashes. Real glass! They put him through the windshield, and that is how they went off the air. So another little twist here in this devil story. Is it Jack Perry? Is it Roderick Strong? Is it MJF himself? I said, you know, MJF was not on the show tonight. Maybe he was. Maybe he was right there, right in front of us. Hidden away by a mask. They've been saying that it's MJF. Roddy, every time he comes out, oh, it's Max, it's Max. It would be too obvious for it to be MJF. It would be lame for it to be MJF. Even though it would fit his character to do that, it would be lame. I don't think it's MJF. You know, could it be their way of reintroducing Jack Perry? Here's the thing. I said a few weeks ago that if it was Jack Perry, like, and I laughed it off. I don't know if Jack Perry, if he's the devil, if he's the mastermind, if he's the one orchestrating this entire thing, this whole fiasco here. I don't know that he is in a position where he could carry an angle like that in a lead heel role. The last time we saw him, he was starting to come into his own as a heel. His promos were better than they were previously. I felt he was getting better at it. He was just such an unlikable little douche. And he was starting to, you know, get comfortable, it felt like, in the role. And then Brawl In happened. We go from Brawl Out to Brawl In 1 year later. We haven't seen him since. And some people think that's a bad sign. It could be a sign that maybe they're not going to bring him back. I fully expect him to be back. And there's a very good chance it will be as a part of this angle, whether he is the devil or whether he is one of the devil's minions. But can he carry something like this if he is the devil and they set him up for a world championship match with MJF? I can understand Tony Khan wanting to take a bad situation and make something out of it. This guy will have probably a good amount of heat when he comes back, okay, for all the reasons that you would think. So why not harness that? Why not use that? If there are going to be people that hate this guy's guts, why not take advantage of that and use it to try to make a bigger heel out of it? I'm not saying he's wrong for wanting to do that. I just don't know that Jack Perry is the one, after all these months of buildup, and they reveal, let's say, that it's him. He pulls the mask off, and it's fucking Jack Perry underneath. I mean, I would love to hear the reaction from the crowd. Is it universal groans? Is it legitimate visceral heat? Do people cheer? Like, what is the reaction of the people? If he pulls off the mask at the Nassau Coliseum, I mean, knowing the Nassau Coliseum, it'll just be crickets. But if he pulls off the mask at the Nassau Coliseum and it's Jack Perry, I just picture groans from the crowd. Like, I think at this point you need somebody bigger for that spot. But it could very well end up being him, and I think that can be the reason why Tony Khan says, you know what, let's take advantage of this and put all the heat on Jack Perry. Let's just go all in on this guy. People hate him? Great. Great, let's use that. Let's make him a bigger heel out of it. As far as who it actually ends up being, look, it could be anybody. It's anybody's guess. Anybody who tells you they know who the devil is lying to you. Because I guarantee you, all these people who claim they know who the devil is, they've given probably five different answers over the last 2 months. 1 week they think it's this guy, the next week they think it's that guy. So we'll let the story play out and see. I do think at World's End we'll get a reveal. I think by World's End you got to move this along and let's find out who it is and then they can go from there. Because then once the devil is revealed, or the devil and his minions are revealed, there's a whole other story now that has to unravel, which is the why and where do they go from here. Do we have a new faction? Who leads the faction, right? It depends on who the devil is. But I think the reveal comes at World's End. And Wardlow is clearly tied into it, not only because he's one of the minions, but just look at his promo tonight, right? The little World's End play on words there. Clearly he'll have some involvement in this. This show is all about the Continental Classic. It was not about a 60-second segment in the parking lot at the end of the show. it was not about Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho, just that horrendous segment in the ring. I'd like to forget that even happened. That was fucking terrible. It was all about the Continental Classic. And if you are enjoying this tournament, if you watch Dynamite, if you watch Collision, if you watch AEW because you want to see great professional wrestling, this was the show for you. This show was geared towards you. We had some great fucking matches on this show tonight. And if that meant that some of the other stories took a back seat, you know what? If for 1 week, because now we're heading into the kind of, you know, towards the end of this tournament here, we're coming up on that very soon. That's okay with me. If you throw matches like the matches we had tonight out there, that's fine with me. I enjoyed the show. But boy, if you're not a fan of this tournament, this was not the show for you, because it pretty much dominated the entire show. Rampage, coming up on Friday, has Orange Cassidy, Ross, and Marshall Von Erich taking on someone. We don't know who. They're going to be in six-man action. Obviously, it's not very important who their opponents are, because they didn't tell us who their opponents are. I don't believe. Collision on Saturday has Andrade against Claudio in a tournament match. We have Eddie Kingston against Daniel Garcia in a tournament match. And we have Brian Danielson against Brody King. Please, pray to the wrestling gods. Let Brian Danielson make it out of this match in one piece. We're so close to the Tokyo Dome. We're so close to him and Okada. Him in there with Brody King scares me. Let him make it out of there in one piece. Dynamite next week has Jon Moxley against Jay White, Continental Classic. Roosh against Swerve Strickland. Holy shit. Sign me up for that. And Mark Briscoe takes on Jay Lethal. The Battle of the Losers. The Battle of the Losers. So, hey, someone's going to get a win. Actually, you know it would be fucking hilarious. If Briscoe and Lethal, if they're the first two to go to a draw next week. Because you would think, well, at least one of them's going to come out of that match. And they're going to have a win. Maybe not. Maybe they both lose. Why not? They've lost every other match. Why should they win next week? They should both lose. Yeah, I was thinking about this, though. Just to go back real quick to the point about gearing up for a Moxley-Swerve rematch in the semifinals. I wonder, you know, it could very well be, and I'm not even sure if this is possible, but it could very well be that we get a triple threat match with Moxley, Swerve, and Jay White. If we end up in a situation where they're all tied, but see, then you had Excalibur tonight mentioned that if you have two men who wrestled previously and they end up in a tie, whoever won their previous match is the one who goes on. So maybe not. Maybe that's not possible. I don't know. Now I'm confused. Is it possible? I mean, it might be possible that we can get a three-way, but if not, you know, either way, we're going to get Swerve and we're going to get Moxley in that semifinal match. That much seems very obvious to me. Here's a Twitter poll. Got 62% thumbs up for Dynamite tonight, 38% thumbs down. That's a good score, not a great score. Chime in on X at Solomonster and let me know what you thought of the show tonight. Sure do love hearing from you guys. Were you a fan of the Continental Classic? I hope so. That or you didn't like this show. I was told there would be no math. Yeah, I don't like doing math during my wrestling shows. I'm not a fan of that either. Fire Panda. Let's start with Fire Panda. Coming in with $20. Fire Panda says, not saying this because you're my boss, but I feel like you have created the best community in the IWC, and God bless you for it. Well, thank you. That's very kind of Fire Panda. I think we have a nice little community here myself. Also, Asuka versus Ilya would absolutely slap. Do you agree? It would. It would. Anywhere else but WWE, because that's the one place that you're never going to get it. But I've seen Asuka in the ring with Minoru Suzuki, so she could step in there with Ilya Dragunov, no problem. By the way, you mentioned Ilya. There was a photo that was posted on social media earlier tonight of Ilya Dragunov being stretchered out of the ring. We had the NXT tapings tonight. the holidays. They're taping ahead, so for next week's show. And he was being stretchered out. Apparently, he was in a match with Ridge Holland. And I didn't have a full update on what happened or he was really hurt. And then I saw Sean Ross Sapp chimed in. There's a Fightful reporter who's, I guess, at the PC for the taping, and he claims it was all storyline. So I'm not sure that makes it that much better, to be honest with you. If they're doing a storyline where Ridge Holland is dropping people on their neck and injuring them, I mean, that sounds like a fucking dumb storyline to me. So, you know what? If that's a storyline, I'd like, may as well abandon that storyline, because that ain't that much better. But at least he's not legitimately injured. I saw that picture, I said, oh my god, you gotta be kidding. You have to be kidding. Apparently it's a story. Let's hope so. Our boy GMB with the $2. What? Yeah. I like it. Shout out to Booker T. Booker T's a big fan of that Trick Williams entrance. I can't do it the way the Booker does it. Tuxedo T. Servo, thank you for the $5. Brother Fluff Salisbury, who do you see winning between the Golden Jets and Absolutely Soft at the pay-per-view? I see the Golden Jets. Talked about this earlier. I think the play is they win the tag titles and end up dropping them to Takeshita and Hobbs when the Young Bucks cost them the belt. Because the Young Bucks could cost them the match at World's End, and then they could retain. But boy, that makes it even worse when you have Takeshita and Hobbs who aren't doing anything. I mean, they're not even going to get a tag team title match out of it? Then what the fuck is the point? Omega and Jericho should at least win the belts and then drop the belts to them. That at least would make some semblance of sense. Not that it makes it great, but if they don't win the belts, then I really don't see the point of what they're doing with Takeshita and Hobbs or any of this Callus family stuff. Lady Fire Panda, let's say you have your own promotion with the roster being the chat. Who are the top faces and heels and how many paper? I don't know. I'm not going to get into the pay-per-views and the commentary team or any of that. Commentary team would be, I'm on the commentary team for House of Glory, so it would be the House of Glory commentary. Top faces and heels? Well, Fire Panda has to be the babyface, obviously. Clearly. Is Bliss Fan here? We'll make Bliss Fan a heel. There you go. Dr. Bropio will be like a tweener. I think Dr. Bropio's kind of in the middle. Where's our boy ABK? ABK is like the king of the babyface. Brian H. the Green Boy. Hello, Solomonster. Hello, Green Boy. Please make sure to tune into your AEW Dynamite stream next Wednesday as I will have a major announcement, he says in the Tony Khan voice. Gotta love those major announcements. Defined Real. Tired of the Tony Khan booking. Moxley did not need the win. Justice for Swerve. I would say be patient, because we are going to get a rematch, and Swerve is going to win the rematch. ABK is Roman. That's right. You know what? ABK is Roman. ABK doesn't show up on every stream. He only shows up when he feels like showing up. Then he makes a very big impression. He's the big star. He doesn't show up on every show. He's the Roman Reigns of our streams. Wild Bird, John Moxley is stale as a creaker. As a what? Thank you, Wild Bird. Also says, AEW, we're doing, who is wearing Devil Mask Mystery Story? NXT, hold my beer. Who attacked Trick Williams? Mystery Story. There's a reason why wrestling companies do these types of storylines, because makes for a good cliffhanger. And you can drag it out for months. It's like, who ran down Stone Cold, right? It's the same concept. They've been doing it for decades. This is nothing new. Jack Lopez, I finished my first trimester. I finished my first semester in college. Jack, that's very cool. He finished his first semester. Well, look, the first semester can be the hardest one. right? You got to get acclimated. I remember my first semester, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anybody. That could be the hardest. He finished his first semester, not his first trimester. Oh, man. Uncanny EXP. Turned 24 tonight, and tonight's show was a good present. Also, what's with all this Jack Perry hate lately? There were a lot of people who didn't like Jack Perry even before the CM Punk stuff. Some people like him and some people don't. More people hate him now because of what happened with the Punk situation. They blame him. Apparently, the other person is completely absolved from responsibility in their eyes. It's only his fault. That's how some people see it. Joey Jojo Jr. Happy birthday, by the way. Uncanny. Joey says, stuck at home all week because I have COVID. I'm sorry to hear that. That sucks. I've been there. Says, but I was able to watch Dynamite and this stream live for the first time in a while. Glass half full. Now, is that made of real glass? That's the question. Joey, feel better, man. Paul Carpenter with the 5. Jericho can't promo for shit nowadays. So bad, and Omega looks so empty-headed. Great matches, though. Von Erichs, sorry that happened to you tonight. Joey says, trust me, Stephanie McMahon is the devil. Matt View with the $10 super chat. Thoughts on this idea. Swerve and Jay White win next week. Swerve, Jay, and Mox all hold 12 points. Semis are now a triple threat, and Swerve wins. White and Swerve both pick up wins over AEW's ace. I think that's a possibility, but I don't know. Based on the rules of the tournament, it might not be possible. It might be a case where, because Moxley beat Swerve, everybody ends up being tied. Moxley would go, but not Swerve. So it'd be Moxley. I don't know. I don't know, because that's the first time I've heard Excalibur mention that on commentary. So I'm not even sure if the three-way is possible or not. Wild Bird, I've been fined by Brian Danielson for calling his wife and sister-in-law sexy milfs. Well, there you go. Jacob Donnelly with the $25 super chat says, my early holiday gift to you is Brie Mode, no refund. So nice, I had to read it twice. Dev to Dust, what year was the Mr. McMahon character at its best? I mean, the early Mr. McMahon, I think, is best. He just went completely off the deep end as we got into the Ruthless Aggression era. In the era that followed, there were some really depraved, disturbing segments with him on TV. Probably none more disturbing than the one where he confronted Paul Heyman in the back and got up in Paul Heyman's face, and he went through this whole diatribe. Like he had lost his mind. He said, I want Undertaker's wife to get raped by a motorcycle gang. And like, this was a real segment that aired on TV. At that point, it was just weird. The Mr. McMahon character, I think, was best in 98 and 99. I think, really, 98 to 2000. 98 to 2000 is probably when I enjoyed that character the most. After that, it just got ridiculous. Brian Anthony Rivers, by the way, gifted 10 memberships. So, Brian, man. Very much. Very kind of you. Prince Vegeta, since the snowman, Tony Khan, is obviously a giant sting mark, can you see him being the first member of the AEW Hall of Fame if that ever becomes a thing? It's like he was the first member of the TNA one. Sure. Yeah, I could see that. And there definitely is going to be an AEW Hall of Fame in the next... I don't even think you're going to have to wait that much longer. I think in the next couple of years, you're going to have an AEW Hall of Fame. Arabian Night 2000, why have they cooled Ricky Starks since the start of 2023, beating Jericho, feuding with Punk and Bryan, and now in a tag, which is odd. You see him leaving in 2024. I think Ricky is going to leave. I do. I think Ricky Starks You know, he's very good friends with Cody Rhodes. I think he was very friendly with CM Punk, and now they're both working for the other company. I think if I had to say, who do I think one of the next people is going to be to leave that company? I think it's going to be Ricky. Becom C. Clearly with the $5 says, Solo, what did I do with the tribalism? I like AEW, WWE, New Japan, even TNA. None of these companies are paying us, so just enjoy the products and relax. That is a very good way to put it. Could not say it any better myself. Tribalism is stupid. Daniel Malcolm, thank you for the $35. Nick Brasso, I don't think Adam Cole is the devil because he said that he can't stand or put any weight on the injured leg. And anytime we have seen the devil, he seems to be standing just fine. Even tonight when he got out of the car. Yes, but the idea would be that he's not as injured as he has led people to believe. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I don't think it's him either. And I do believe he is seriously hurt. I don't think it's a put-on. You know one of the biggest reasons why I don't think it's a put-on? And if you don't really follow him on his Twitch, you might not understand this. I don't follow him religiously on there, but I've watched his Twitch content occasionally. And he has his own little community on there. And he really tries to keep it totally separate from wrestling. And he's very open and honest with them. And I just don't think that he would just lie to them for a wrestling story. I really don't. That's one of the reasons that I think the nature of the injury and how serious it is and everything, I think it's totally on the up and up. I really don't think it's a situation where they're overplaying it. He's going to be the devil. I mean, I guess it depends how long they drag the storyline out for. Oh my God, if they drag it out for another 9 months, then it could be him. But no, I don't think it's him. Arabian Knight, I've never seen someone who's a generational talent in the ring be so bland and boring on the mic for years like Omega. Has he ever had a serious problem? I've never heard him have one. Not saying he hasn't cut one. But if you ask me what's my favorite Kenny Omega promo, I don't... Kenny Omega is a generational talent. Kenny Omega is a fantastic in-ring worker. He's a great professional wrestler. Promos are not his strong suit. I cannot think of a single memorable Kenny Omega promo that I have ever heard in my life. Frankly, that's not why I watch Kenny Omega. I watch Kenny Omega because I want to see him go in there and have banger matches, whether it's in AEW, whether it's in New Japan. That's why I watch Kenny Omega when he is out there on television. But I couldn't name you a single Kenny Omega promo that I would recommend and say, hey, you got to go watch this promo. I can't think of one. Wildbird. AEW tag team division is broken. Period. Not what it used to be. We've got Joey petitioned to get more Toni Storm on commentary. She was quite good. I enjoyed her on commentary. Especially in the middle of the match when she had the camera guy cut to a shot of her so she could pose in black and white. Dan Richards prediction, Iron Claw better than the wrestler. Yeah, I don't think so. I'll be very surprised if it is. I have to wait until I see it, but the wrestler is going to be very difficult. Daniel, look at this, with the double super chat, 25, then the 12. And I hate when I have to do math on you. $37 right there from Daniel, thank you. Actually, here's another 5. Imagine being married to Renee, choosing to kiss Swerve. But I thought you all don't sports entertain in that company, Fox. Daniel again. Man, Daniel's on a roll here. Also, if Ridge Holland legit injured Ilya and it's not a work, do you think he should be fired? Keep seeing folks calling for it. What say you? I'm not going to call for anybody to be fired when I don't even know if what happened is legitimate or not. Apparently, it's a storyline. But if it were a situation where he actually dropped, like, he made a mistake and dropped this man on his head, then I think it's time to get him out of the ring at that point. I mean, at some point, you have to say enough is enough. So if it was a real thing and it was on him and he dropped the guy in his head, this would be what, the third time, fourth time that there was a situation like this? Get him out of the ring. It's that simple. Joey, Zac Efron is the devil. The Iron Claw was a secret way for him to train before his debut. The Von Erichs are also two of the masked men. That's interesting. The Von Erichs are two of the masked men? I hadn't thought about that. I don't think so, but I suppose anything is possible. By the way, we're around 340 or so likes, so we are way behind the goal. So it is not looking good. Got to get those likes in if you want some Be the Booker. Barry says, what did you think of Amy Weber? I didn't think anything of Amy Weber. She came and she left. She was a pretty face in the crowd, and that's it. I couldn't tell you anything else I remember about her. She didn't do anything that stood out to me. She came and she went. That was it. Rizzo, Lady Firepen and Solo, after my day at work today, I would be a heel. Because, like Punk, I work with children, and I was very tempted to to punch some coworkers. I need the money, though, so I will just vent to you. Need the money. Donated $10. Well, Rizzo, I'm sorry you work with children. Wish I had some advice for you. I don't want you to lose your job. And Joey with the $3. Would we ever get a live stream or a sound off with you and Chris Van Vliet? Never say never. I did Chris's show during the pandemic when everybody was still kind of locked down. So I guess it was 2 years ago at this point. He had me on his show, and I enjoyed it. Got a great response. We were trying to make that happen for a while. But you never know. You never know. Never say never. I'm open to it. Chris is a good guy. I count Chris as a friend. He's a good guy. Thank you for the super chat love tonight. I very much appreciate it. Next time I'm going to be live with you is going to be on Friday for SmackDown. And that will be... I'm trying to think, because WWE is going to be taping some shows for the holidays. I'm not quite sure what their schedule is going to be yet. I know we have another week before we get to Christmas week. So we'll wait and see. I'm not sure exactly what their taping schedule is going to be. I know they're giving the talent off. I think, is it the week before Christmas, I believe? It might be from the 19th to the 25th. I don't think they have any shows. So I think they're giving the roster some time off. But we'll see if they do some kind of recap shows, or I'm hoping not. I mean, I'm hoping we actually get first-run shows, even if they have to tape them in advance. As long as we get regular shows, I'll be here. The Winston Slip. What are your thoughts on Jericho's legacy so far? Well, I mean, look, I mean, his legacy speaks for itself. You know, you can't argue with the success that the guy has had in all of these different promotions. And he's had success in all of these different promotions, and the match he had in New Japan, that kind of, it really in many ways is what led to the creation of AEW, was that Wrestle Kingdom match against Kenny Omega. All the people he's worked with, all the titles he's won, whether you like the guy or not, I mean, his legacy, he'll go down as one of the goats. Can't argue with success. The body of work that he has put together is Hall of Fame worthy. DEH Sires, Punk is coming for Sean's job. I did see that. Supposedly. Punk. I'm not even sure why this is coming out now. Supposedly, Punk has this idea that one day he could take over for Shawn Michaels and run NXT. Shawn Michaels now going to be looking over his shoulder. Shawn Michaels was so happy to have CM Punk back in WWE, he's going to start reading these reports, and he might not be so happy anymore. He's going to be looking over his shoulder. And so no Be the Booker tonight. We'll have to wait until Friday. So until then, I will see you back here on Friday night for the SmackDown recap live on YouTube. I expect to see you back here. Until then, take care, guys.